Are you ready to dream on? Do you know how to fly high and soar among the clouds? Get ready to live adventurously, because the Laura Meeks Show starts now. Listen as Laura lifts you off the ground while teaching you how to fly high. Forget ground-level drama and be prepared to confront your dreams head-on as she encourages you to navigate towards your North Star and into what just might be the best life you've imagined. Dream on. Live adventurously on The Laura Meeks Show.
Hey, welcome everybody. Welcome to The Laura Meeks Show. It is high noon here on the Pacific coast of the United States, where I have my beautiful studio here in the heart of Palm Springs or Rancho Mirage. Actually, Rancho Mirage is called the where presidents play, because Gerald Ford, a previous president, and others, Obama, come out here to Palm Springs to hang out. Harriet and I were talking earlier in the fact that everything is relative. I'm down here, and I'll introduce Harriet here in a second. But down here, we've been in the 120s, and so 100 seems like, wow, this is really cool. If you're coming from the 70s going to 100, it'll seem a lot different. Perception is an interesting thing. Still, the country is, at least our country, is still in the midst of a COVID battle. I am still kind of sheltering in place. It's not that I've changed a lot of my world, because I work out of my house, and so a lot of I've been sheltering in place for years. So other than going to the store, that hasn't changed a lot. But we are still in the midst of a pandemic and a lot of interesting things going on. Out of that comes an incredible show. We have our guest today is Harriet Tinka. And Harriet, I'm going to, for the lack of a better intro, I'm going to read your intro, because I like, of all the things that I've crafted up for you, this one I like best. Harriet Tinka, described as a superwoman or a woman who wears many hats, is a perfect example of finding a need in the community and filling it. We're going to talk about her, how she's doing that. Her students know her as the powerhouse role model who makes being genuine the most powerful thing of all. And we're going to speak specifically about genuine and self-esteem, how that fits in. Harriet is a best-selling co-author, and I've done a show with Harriet before. We talked about the book, and we can talk about a little bit about that. She's a Turning Point expert, a passionate life coach, a blogger, a chartered professional accountant, a football official, a Toastmaster divisional champion. I am a Toastmaster as well. And an ultra marathon runner. Ooh, I haven't gone that far. I like hiking a lot. I'm not big on running. With that, I want to introduce Harriet. Harriet, welcome to the show. Thank you. She is. Tell us where you are, because part of that was the discussion we had about the coolness.
I am in Edmonton, Canada. And in Canada, we are, I would say, phase two of COVID. So we've had a lot of things open up. Now we're seeing human beings now. Before, we were just seeing, we were imagining what human beings look like.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things that I told you earlier, one of the things I want to start with, because COVID, there are so many ways that as human beings that we can either lift ourselves up or push ourselves down. And this COVID battle has a lot of people shrinking down. And so my question to you, I love the idea of starting the day with gratitude. The attitude of gratitude is a high frequency. If you're a frequency person like I am, gratitude is on a higher frequency. So it kind of lifts you up. So are there things that you're grateful about now that we're in dealing with this COVID thing? What could you be grateful for?
I think there's so many things to be grateful for. For example, I didn't realize what a big deal it was to have things like, you know, your hairstylist, things like that, your dentist.
Grades are coming back.
All of those things, like your eye doctor, like you take it for granted because it's already there. But now that they've opened up, I'm saying to myself, oh my goodness, I'm so grateful for that. Or even people working in the grocery store. Like, can you imagine if they weren't there? I mean, they're putting their lives also in at a risk because who knows who's coming into the grocery store. So I'm so grateful for that. I'm also grateful for my health, like being able to wake up in the morning and go outside and be able to do things that I'm able to do. And I often say I'm grateful for my legs because I love running.
We'll share in a minute. There's more to legs than it meets the eye. In this particular story, there's more than meets the eye. I wholeheartedly agree with, and I think it's important that we demonstrate that gratitude to others, because in so many ways you can think of all the horrors, but wholeheartedly. I mean, just the very first thing that you said is that we're grateful for other humans. I mean, when you're sheltered in place and you realize that just going out to dinner or to a movie or hanging out with somebody else physically is a joy. Not everybody in the world now seems to know how to Zoom, and we can see other people, right?
Yeah,
but that's so different than being with people. And one of the things that is interesting, a good friend of mine, Susan, is about my age, a little bit older than me, and she lives alone. Mm-hmm. And so my wife Annie and I live here. We have another family member that's in our house, and then we have four dogs and a cat. So in the land of sheltering in place, we see a lot of each other during the day. It's interesting that when you're living alone, that really, really puts the I need human contact into your gratitude, because we are grateful that people there are healthy people, that there are nurses and doctors that are working hard to help the people that are in trouble. So there are a lot of things just in general to be grateful for. So thank you. That was good. That's a great way to start. Today, our topic today, and as I had mentioned to the listeners, if you haven't seen the earlier interview I did with Dr. Alan Leica and Harriet before, we talked in general about the book that they're working on. But as so often happens on this show, that we get talking about something and then it's just like, oh, okay, time to go. It's like, oh, we could have done so much more. So I invited Harriet back because Harriet herself is doing a lot of very great work in this world, and a lot of it comes from, a lot of it was precipitated by her story, and I will get into that in a little bit. But one of the first things that I want to ask you, the show I wanted to craft around the idea of self-esteem, and you do a lot of work with younger women and girls that are in the building stage and trying to figure out who they are in the world. A lot of my story deals around, you know, who am I? Who am I? So I wanted, one of the things I asked you before the show is I want you to think back to who Harriet was as a senior in high school. How would you describe that young woman?
Oh, you bet. First of all, I forgot to say thank you for having me. Well, I get excited about talking about gratitude. So thank you for having me.
Super happy.
Yeah. So for me, when I was in high school, it's a very transitional stage, because actually my parents just moved from Kenya in Africa, and we just moved to Canada. And that's in grade 12, when you're just beginning to kind of figure out who you were. So I really didn't know how to think. Like my thinking was different when I was in Kenya versus in Canada, because in Kenya, you just accepted what things are. There was no issues. There was really very little bullying. But when it came to Canada, it was a totally different new ball game. Like you had to really identify who you are, how you dress, because in Kenya, we used to wear uniform. Now we have to compete what the other person is wearing, and they're wearing the latest shoes. And also we had to worry about what you look like. There's girls were putting on makeup. I didn't even know what makeup was. So I had to also adjust and try to be what everybody else was. I had to fit in, so to speak. So I didn't know what my identity was. I had to find my identity using other people's images. Like if that person looks that way, that's what I tended to do. So I was lost. I didn't even know what my identity was, but all I knew is I was fitting in.
Yeah. Well, and it's a very challenging thing. And I'd like to say that it's something that you could solve like in high school or college, but it really doesn't. I'm not sure it ever ends as the who am I, because so much happens. But one of the things you bring up, and sometimes I have traveled a lot in the world. I was in the Air Force. I've traveled personally all over the world. And one of the things I find interesting is the fact is that as a teen, a young teen, you're in Kenya. You have an identity. I'm a Kenyan, if that's a term. I'm from Kenya. I have a clan, or you know, who are your family, the people that you're with, you know, you're in a city or a town, or you know, and there's kind of like, okay, this is who I am. And then think about this for the listeners. Think about this. You pick yourself up as a family and move not only out of your country but across an ocean into Canada. And I mean, just latitude wise, you Kenya is near equatorial. Now you're like in the colds of Canada. I mean, that whole physical change is challenging. And then the challenging thing is now you're in high school and you came from Kenya. So now there's got to be a space where you're like, okay, I'm Harriet from Kenya, until eventually you become Harriet the Canadian. I mean, see how that, I mean, there's like a transition period there where your identity is where you were. And this happened, I have to say, in the military, we traveled all over the world. And the fun part about being on a military base is that you're in a hodgepodge of people, mainly from all around the United States. So like on my crew, I was from Minnesota. I had a co-pilot who was from Michigan. We had somebody who was from Alabama. I mean, and so there's all this kind of cross identity as to where their family was from. But we also then had an identity as Air Force officers. So there was kind of like this, okay, I can identify myself in this group, but I'm also, I grew up over here. Eventually you get to a spot where you're Harriet in Edmonton, and I was from Kenya.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a growth process. Now, part of the reason I asked for high school is tell me about who you are now. How would you describe, I mean, I read your bio, but describe to me, who are you now? Who are you now? How would you describe yourself now?
I would describe myself as somebody who absolutely loves myself unconditionally. I don't doubt myself. I don't use other people's opinion to identify who I am. And I am just so excited to get the girls and the women that I work with to also feel the same way I do. Because I wake up every morning feeling really purposeful, and I'm so excited about making a difference in the world. So I would say I am one who serves others, and I'm so excited and so proud of what I do.
Right. And so that is so well said. So let's take a look at the difference. So here you are, a teen in Canada, transported to Canada, and there is this kind of like, who am I? Like you said, you know, that, and I do want to say this. I did go to a high school where we had uniforms, and I have to say that at first the thought of a uniform was like, oh my God, this is horrible. I don't want to be just like everybody else. But I will tell you, being not only in high school, but in the military, I have to tell you, there's a certain joy of just reaching in. You know exactly what you're going to wear. There's like, that takes that whole thing off the table. And I think especially for high school, young women in high school, that kind of takes a piece of the puzzle out. So you're not worried so much about how you're competing, and you can kind of think more about where you are in school. But, you know, here you've gone from this kind of questioning who I am to somebody who is self-empowered and self-engaged proud of who you are, excited to get up in the morning. That all leads to your work. But before we get too far, because we have about 10 minutes before the break, I want to talk specifically about the incident that happened to you, because I do think that in so many ways that was a turning point for you. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to introduce the story this way, because I took this out of your book, which I absolutely loved. You came across a young woman named Amber, mm-hmm. and during your incident, and I'm just going to read this one paragraph. Amber was an only child whose parents were instantly killed when a drunk driver ran a red light and struck their vehicle. She would be confined to a wheelchair for the rest of her life. She was motherless, fatherless, and homeless. Yet, she was full of joy and happiness. Curious, I asked her why she exuded this joy. She looked at me with a sincere smile and whispered, "I am lucky to be alive." Now here's a and then she goes on to say, now here's a challenge for you. You're alive too. Why don't you use your experiences to make a difference in the world? That experience for you, knowing what I know about you, was a changing point. Tell us how you got to Amber, because I think that's an important piece.
Oh, you bet. I'll go back to memory lane.
Yes.
So when I was in high school, of course, I was discovered to be an international model. So I did the modeling thing. It was exciting. There I was walking the runway. I was full of confidence. And then I promised my parents after the modeling career, I would go back and get a formal education, because that was the reason we came to Canada. So I registered and I enrolled into the university. And it was during the university enrollment that I met a young man, a fellow student who was absolutely very kind, it was basically, I say to myself, everybody should have a friend like that, because you always showed me where I needed to go. I didn't know anybody. I didn't know if people were wanting to be my friend because I'd been an international model. So I didn't know if their friendship was genuine, but with him, it was. And I was your typical domestic violence victim, because I was young, I was naive, and I didn't even know the signs of an abusive relationship. So when I got to know this fellow student, he became very abusive. He would yell and scream and say all sorts of disrespectful things and hit me. But then later on, he would apologize. So I said, oh, wow, okay, it's okay, because he apologized. So this went on and I noticed the pattern. And then eventually it was too much. So I went to the police and I said, this is what's happening. What can I do? They said, absolutely nothing, because nothing has happened. The only thing they can do is give me a restraining order, which meant that he could not come near me. So I said, okay, that's all they have for me. I will take it. So I took it and I was happy, because I thought, oh, now he's not going to come near me at all. So it was one evening, I was busy studying for an exam. And I mean, I was doing a project and studying, and it got late. I decided, okay, I better go home quickly. So I went, because it was only 5 minutes away from the university. I got into the elevator, not worried about my surrounding. I was looking for my keys. And it was in the elevator that I felt somebody grab my neck and just squish it tight. And it was his voice. He said, how dare you get a restraining order against me? Don't you know that I'm the only man who can unconditionally love you? So when he said that, I screamed. And he was scared that I was screaming. He took off his shoes, grabbed a pair of socks and stuffed it in my mouth so that I can be quiet. And then he grabbed me, took me in his vehicle, and we started driving. Randomly, he was screaming, yelling, and suddenly we ran into a telephone booth. And he looked at the telephone booth and asked me to get out of the vehicle and go call my parents to say goodbye to them, because that would be the last time that they'll ever hear from me. So I said, no. And he said, he was very angry. He said, Harriet, in the back of the car, I have a knife, a rope, and gasoline. I want you to go call your parents, because if you don't, I have a rope, a knife, and gasoline. I'm going to wrap your body with a rope, cut your body in pieces, and put gasoline all over you. Now, are you going to call your parents? And I looked at him again and I said, no. So that made him even more angry. So he grabbed a knife and stabbed me 2 times on my left leg. and there was blood gushing everywhere. And even today, I still don't remember how I got from that point where I was stabbed to how I got to the hospital. However, when I got up, there was the doctor and my father, and the doctor told my father that I would never be able to walk again because the stab wound was so deep, my bone was chipped, and I'd lost a lot of blood. So when I had the news, I was so depressed. Here was an international model walking the runways full of confidence, and now a cripple and depressed. So the only thing that separated me was the trauma. And I started feeling sorry for myself. Why me? I'm such a wonderful person. How could this happen to me? So I figured feeling sorry for myself was doing me no good. I needed to start healing. So it was during the healing process that I actually met Amber. So it was in the waiting room. Yeah. And I met Amber, and that's where you shared the story of how I met her. And she was my turning point.
That whole challenge of what you went through, the trauma of what you went through, and now you're thinking, poor me. Mm-hmm. And then you meet Amber, who's this little kid who's everything is so relative in this world. It's like, you think, well, look what I've lost. And then you meet Amber, who's 9 years old, and she's homeless. Her parents are dead. She doesn't know what she's going to do. And she's going to be in a wheelchair for the rest of her life. And she's like, yeah, let's, you know, what are we going to do? Mm-hmm. You're like, what are we going to do? I'm going to cry. And, you know,
yeah.
It's like, no, we're not going to do that. And the reason I want to kind of focus on that a little bit is because I do think that part of building your self-esteem is your ability to have challenges and then overcome them in some fashion. It's that confidence. Yeah, and it's interesting to me that you did have a certain kind of confidence as a model on a runway.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an important piece of it. There is a confidence that in this job, and I'll relate it to my flying. I mean, I might not be really good at a lot of things, but when I'm flying an airplane, I know that I can do this. And I know that because I've done it a lot. I've spent years and years and years doing that. And so there's a confidence that comes from the fact that it's like, oh yeah, I've done that. I've landed here. I've been in the weather. You know, it's I've been at night. I've been high. I've been low. I can do it. I got that. But to transfer that confidence into other scenarios where you may not have done things before, and this, I think, you know, when you're talking about the fact that you had. And a part of this in the introduction, one of the things that you're doing is running ultra marathons, right? But you just told us that you had two giant stab wounds in your left leg and you might not ever walk again. Does part of that confidence come from overcoming that my leg, I never thought I would walk again and now I can, so I'm going to run like the banshee?
I think it does. Now that you put it that way, I like the way you packaged that. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's what it is. And I'm a very driven person. When somebody tells me no, for me, it's a challenge to actually do it. So when the doctor said I'll never walk again, that was for me a challenge. I could have gone the other way, but I was raised to always fight for myself and always say, okay, I have to do the impossible that people says is not going to happen. So that was my drive, is to do what other people say is not possible to make it possible.
Well, and that's a good spot. I've got just a couple of minutes before the break. So part of what I want to kind of aim at is that you just said, if somebody says no, then that makes me want to do it. When you look back at the high school Harriet, was that part of high school Harriet? Did she have that, if you say no, I'm going to do it anyway?
Yes, part of it did, but I wasn't that much driven. When somebody said no, I still did it, but it wasn't a strong effort. It was like, okay, I'll just do it. But no, I didn't put 110% effort. It was like, I could do it, but I'm not motivated to do it that much.
Well, and part of the reason I asked it that way is because I'm convinced that these are things that we grow into. And when we come back from the break, part of what I want to talk about is I want to take that idea of, you know, where you were in high school, where you are now, and then talk about how can we as adults help younger people build that? Because that's a lot of what you're doing, is helping young women do that. So we'll go into, after the break, we're going to go into how exactly you create out of the high school Harriet, the adult Harriet, and how we can transfer that to other people. Real quick, if they want to go to your website or contact you, how can they do that?
Well, my website is really simple. It's empoweredme.ca.
.ca. So for those down here in the lower 48,
that's Canada.
.com. It's .ca. Empoweredme.ca. And we'll put that on in the notes. But I did want to just make that. Now, do you take phone calls? I mean,
You bet. I love phone calls. I like talking to humans.
I like talking to humans. I never see humans anymore. So give us your telephone number and then we're going to cut to a break.
You bet. It's 780-265-6884.
Okay, 780-265-6884. Okay, so if on the break you want to call her, she might not answer, but okay, with that, this is Laura Meeks. We're going to take a quick break. Stick with us, because when we come back, I want to talk to Harriet about how this applies to you guys, how we can take this information and build a stronger sense of self-esteem. This is Laura Meeks. I'll be right back.
Have you ever wondered how you might feel differently if the books were full of her instead of him? What if your history lesson was filled with powerful women leaders and rulers? As a woman, would you feel more empowered? As a man, would you see women differently? I'm Megan Edge. I'd love for you to join me on my radio show, Playing on the Edge, Radical Change with Ease, with my co-host, Dr. Pat, on Transformation Talk Radio. I hope to see you there.
We remember a time when you could simply form a thought and it would manifest. The harmony was forgotten, but it is returning now. The Power of Inspiration and Awakening Radio with Julia Griffin on TransformationTalkRadio.com each second and fourth Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific will take you on adventures through the heart and spirit, exploring who we once were. This intuitive healer studied under the guidance of wolves, learning from their wisdom to master a higher frequency for a new state of mind. Visit OneTrueSelf.com.
Yeah, yippee-skippy to that, baby. We're not done yet. Some of us are out here to educate and inspire. This year, 2020, is the year we gotta show me the money in the cash flow. I'm Dr. Pat. This is the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By.
Visit thedrpatshow.com.
Living a richly abundant life? Sound too good to be true? Listen in to Richly Abundant Women with Julie Steelman on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Embrace a vibrant future of breaking free financially and creating a richly abundant life filled with prosperity and growth. To learn more about Julie Steelman and Richly Abundant Women, visit www.juliesteelman.com.
For stimulating conversation and keys that will change your life, tune in to Dynamic Destiny with Coach Pete every first and third Wednesday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Join Pete to get clarity for your calling and practical wisdom for results. For more about Coach Pete, visit PeteCoaching.com. That's P-E-T-E Coaching.com.
Are you ready to awaken to your divine and true potential? Tune into a spirited exchange radio with me, Carrie Kadambi, every second and fourth Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. We discuss the evolution of the modern mind and how the power of awakening, healing, and connecting allows us to step into living a life of love in action. For more information about me, visit thedivineguidancegift.com.
Hey, this is Laura Meeks. Welcome back to the second half of the Laura Meeks Show, live from Rancho Mirage, California. Today, Harriet Tinka is with me. She's from Edmonton, Canada. And Harriet, you and I talked about this before, but I've been as high as Vancouver, and then I went over to Calgary, which are almost in the same latitude. And then when you look at Edmonton's like... near the North Pole's
altitude,
right? it's way up in Canada, which is an interesting spot. Before the break, Harriet, you and I were talking about one of the things that you said was that when somebody says no to you, that boy, I'm ready. Now I'm ready. I'm going to take that on. I'm not going to accept that. And as many people that have followed me on my show know, I spent 50 years as a guy, and then I made a gender transition, and now I've lived 15 years as a woman, as a female. And the contrast, I think one of the values that I bring to the table is the contrast between how little boys and men grow up and how girls grow up and the culture surrounding that. And the one thing that you had said was, you know, that makes me mad. If you say no, I'm going to work real hard. That's not a real common thing for young women, is it?
It's not, definitely not. I think this is something that they have to work towards. And when a lot of the girls come in and they don't have that sort of, they didn't grow up having that sort of mentality, that mindset. So it's up to me to instill it in them. And the way I do it is to show them, first of all, they have self-worth. Because in order for you to have any sort of attitude or any sort of a great self-esteem, because self-esteem and self-confidence are two different things. And I explained to them the difference. Of course, self-confidence is based on the skills and also based on the experience. So, if, for example, yourself, you're good in flying. You can have, your confidence can be really high, but your self-esteem will be low. They're not always aligned. Because, you know, you can
so fly. Well.
Yeah, so you know that works. So these girls, sometimes the self-esteem and self-confidence are both very low. So the thing that will separate that is the self-worth, to know that you have the same worth that you have. So what I'll do, I'll bring like $100. I usually bring $100 bill, and I'll take it and I'll crumble it, and I'll ask them, who wants this $100 bill? And everybody wants it. And then I'll take it again, crumble it, step on it. Sometimes I'll dump water on it. And then I'll ask them again, who wants this $100 bill? Everybody puts their hand up again, and I'll ask them why. And they'll say, because it did not lose its self-worth. And I tell them, you just made a point. Because in life, you're going to get crumbled on. You're going to get stepped on. Water is going to get dumped on you. But at the end of the day, you do not lose your self-worth. So life is about going through ups and downs. But it doesn't mean that you're going to lose yourself within it. You're still the same person. So you need to love yourself first. Once you do that, then I'll start giving them the tools on how when somebody says no, to actually use that as a challenge. So first of all, they have to see the self-worth. Once that's done, because it's a step process, self-worth number one. And then once they see the self-worth, then we work on the self-esteem.
Now, I have to say, I've never heard that example, but I am going to steal it from you big time, because I think that is a really great example of the fact that you can crumble it, you can get it wet, you can pound on it, but it's still worth $100. That's the one. It's like, I'll just unfold it and it's still worth $100. Mm-hmm. And that is an incredible way to kind of encapsulate and help somebody understand that. But building that, one of my favorite mentors, sadly he's gone, Wayne Dyer. But one of the things that, and I think you've talked about Wayne Dyer before, one of the things that Wayne talks about is that when if you wanted to give somebody a dozen oranges, yes, you first have to have a dozen oranges. You can't give something that you don't have.
Yes.
And so you can't, you know, the idea to me of having self-worth is that you intrinsically have to know in your mind, just like you said, that, you know, you can beat me, punch me, bully me, you can do whatever, but I know, you know, I'm a $100 bill. I'm still, no matter what you do, I still know that I'm $100 bill. How do you tell somebody? I imagine a teenage girl and she's just thinking like, you know, I'm worthless. I'm too tall. I've got freckles. I'm not the right shape yet. And, you know, I'm not good at makeup. And so I'm worthless. And then you're going to come and say what?
So first of all, they have to tell me where they get these ideas from. So I have them write down, where do you get these ideas? Is it from yourself, from your teachers, from Instagram, what it is? So it's an exercise process. You write down why these ideas are in your head, because I want them to unlearn what they already believe. That's number one. We write them all down. I'm ugly because somebody told me I'm ugly. I'm ugly because my parents said I was ugly. I'm ugly because my teacher said I was ugly. So we write them down. And then the second thing is, why do you think that people said this? So we go through a process going through that. So while we're writing those down, I have to also have them put it down and I'll tell them how self-esteem develops. First of all, write down the information so they know this is what my inventory is of what I think of myself. And I'll bring them a treasure box, which is, I have it here.
A treasure. I want some treasure.
So a treasure box, pretty probably hard to kind of have it show because it's reflected.
Yeah.
So bring a treasure box and I say everybody is born like this empty treasure box. There's nothing going on. As time develops, things start being put in your treasure box. They'll say you're great, you're beautiful, you're ambitious. All these positive experiences go into your treasure box. But as time goes on, there's also things that get taken out. So which will be that whatever is in their inventory, that's what's being taken out of their treasure box. So maybe I'm not good enough, I'm ugly, I'm this. So as those things are being told to you, they're coming out of your treasure box. And as life, as we know it, people can be extremely cruel. So they'll say something to you that hurts you so much that your treasure box is completely sealed. So if I say, Laura, you are such a great helper, you help me with this, you're so dedicated, nothing is going into your treasure box because you've sealed it. So it goes in, but goes out. It doesn't sit in. You don't let it in because you won't let it let in because you've been so hurt. So then I ask the students, what is it that can open up your treasure box? Sometimes they kind of question what it is, but it's always obvious, which is a key. A key will open up your treasure box because right now it's sealed. And I share with them the three components of self-esteem, which is that sense of belonging, because when you're around people and they love you and support you, you're going to feel loved. Like, you know, when you're celebrating Christmas or whatever it is, your birthdays, that's the sense of belonging because everybody's supporting you. And then the number two component is that sense of appreciation. If you do something, let's say you come in and you've done something for me, maybe you cleaned my house or you've cooked for me, I'll say thank you. So that sense of appreciation, because, you know, people like to be thanked, to feel important. And the very last component that I discuss is that sense of accomplishment. For example, maybe the students thought, I'm never going to pass this exam or I'll never pass my driver's license. So that's the thought they have. But with hard work, eventually they'll pass. Maybe they try three times before they pass the exam. So that the sense of accomplishment. So those are the three things I share with them. And I give examples: sense of belonging, accomplishment, and appreciation. But those components are nothing if you don't have gratitude. So gratitude is the baby step towards that. So we
work. Like, we start with gratitude.
Yeah, exactly. Gratitude is the number one thing. So you need to be able to be grateful for the little things that you have. For example, it's easy to complain about your legs. Oh, my legs are too fat, or the other one too skinny or too muscular. But what if you didn't have legs? Then what? Yeah, so those are the kind of things that you think they get embarrassed. They're like, oh, okay, I better stop hating on my legs. I got to appreciate them. So it's now,
one of the really common things that I've come across, I have a daughter. She went through her teen years as I went with her. And there's always this kind of, I love your analogy of your treasure box is sealed, because there comes a time, depending on what has happened to a young woman, that no matter how much you say, and it's even harder as a parent, because as a parent, we're always telling our daughter, you're doing great, but it's bouncing off. It's like, you're doing great. Yeah. You're just saying that.
Because you're my parent.
Say that. I really am a bad person. You're just saying that to make me feel good. How can you awaken them to the fact that, no, they're actually saying these things, they're true? I mean, you open your treasure box, put them in.
I think it's the little things that you'll say. Sometimes you'll say it and they don't believe it because you're a parent, because you're supposed to say that.
Yeah.
But if I tell them the same thing, they're going to be, oh, wow, you see this about me. Because it's funny, because as parents, we can tell them the same thing and somebody else comes in, tells them, it's like, oh, I believe the other person versus you. So it's kind of having somebody unfamiliar tell them these things.
Well, and I think that's an important thing, I think, for you and me and all the listeners is that in so many ways, being an outsider can make you actually more influential. And in that, if you say, wow, you're beautiful, and they're like, well, yeah, mom and dad have said that for years, but I've never had anybody outside my environment say that, then it's kind of like, and then that's when the parents say, see, we told you.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. Well, you're the parents. You're supposed to say that stuff.
Yeah.
But I think for anybody at any age, there is an awakening that has to happen, where you have to be open to the idea that people are telling you things that they truthfully believe.
Yes.
Because I think there are a lot of people, and a lot of people can have a lot of negative experiences and actually seal their box like for a long, long time. I mean,
you bet.
They can nod and say, yeah, oh, thank you. And then they go and they say, yeah, I'm still a horrible person.
You bet. And what I do caution to a lot of girls, because sometimes if you live in other people's compliments, you can also live in other people's criticism. So if that's your goal, so at the end of the day, use the positives to really empower you, because people also say negative things and you don't want to depend on other people on that. So what are the very most important thing is to love themselves unconditionally, so that if you tell me I'm beautiful, if you tell me I'm ugly, the information is used the same way, because everything you say in your mind is the information, is how you process it. So if I say you're ugly and you're beautiful, those are exactly the same information. So your body will process it. I mean, your brain will process it the way you learned to do it. Beautiful to you means something good. So your body will go in the computer system and say, this is a good thing. So you react that way. But if you say ugly, your body goes in the same and it processes that way. So the information is exactly the same. It's exactly how you decides to process it. And that's the thing I teach the girls to really be mindful of.
Well, and on a slightly different angle of that, when I was in the military, I came to an aha moment. I was probably two-thirds of the way through my career. I was six, eight years into my career, and I was in an office, and I had to go tell my boss. Called me in and said, "Hey, tell me about this security issue that you've got this report in front of me, and you're telling me that we have a security issue." And it was true that we were in a super top secret spot. We had the secrets of the giant nuclear war in our little compartment. And when we were typing and stuff, we had to print to a secret printer. And my job was to make sure that people used the right printer so that the super secrets didn't go out into the world. And I looked around and realized that people are not using the super secret printer. They're printing to the easy printer because in those days, this is right when computers were starting and it was so hard. There were switches and all kinds of weird stuff you had to do to make the printer work. So I went in and told my boss, I said, well, we have a problem. There are people who are using the wrong printer and we might be leaking our secrets out. He goes, that's not true. That's not true. And I'm like, okay, you know, and from my world, I'm thinking, okay, there is one truth and you're wrong and I'm right. So I yell out to this guy named Lou and I said, hey, Lou, which printer are you using? He says, well, I'm using this one over here. I said, that's not the secret printer. The secret printer's over there. I know, but that one's so hard. So I just used this one and I turned to my boss and said, see? And he got furious. He stood up and said, get the hell out of my office. We don't have a problem. And I came up with this idea after that truth is what you believe. And he believed, for however he wanted to do it, he believed there was not a problem. And from that point on, I started to use that on my business cards. Truth is what you believe, because this comes back into what you're saying is that you, as a young woman, have to believe in your truth. You have to love yourself, and kind of like Wayne, you can't give away love if you don't have it inside. And so the quest is that and I like what you said, because no matter whether I say you're ugly or you're beautiful, that shouldn't change your truth. You have to know that you are beautiful, that you are capable, that you can do it. That's part of self-confidence, part of self-esteem, self-worth. All of that comes back to that, who are you? And that's kind of why I started the show with, you know, describe who you are as a high school student, because that changes and can change dramatically based on the things that are happening. But I think that part of what you're doing is instilling in much earlier age than happened to me, this idea that you do have self-worth and that is something that's inside you. Now, tell me, one of the things that I'm finding late in life to help change those thoughts, because one of the things I know from my coaching and my training is you are what you think you are. That kind of truth is what you believe. You are what you think you are. Yeah. And so if you think that you're capable, then you're capable. But to go from, I don't think I can do it, to yes, I can do it, takes a little bit. What kind of tools or techniques or things do you help people to achieve that? How can you go from I'm a slug and I'm not worth anything to Captain
of the ship.
Who's the new Captain Marvel?
Your man's right, yeah.
She's really good. She's a pilot too. That's why I kind of like her.
So I think the biggest thing when you say you can do it, most of the time, because you have to ask, is it that you are inexperienced or you're not qualified? So usually that's the question I ask them. Have you tried it before? It's like, whoa, I tried it and I didn't do it. Or no, I've never tried it. So that's the first question I ask. Is it because you've never done it or you're not experienced? And then we start with the things that they already have done in the past. Like, what is it that you've done? Maybe I tried out for high school. It could be a play. The first time I didn't actually make it, but I tried and tried and tried again, and I made it. So I use history to show that anything you've tried, it didn't come easy for you. It's like when you're born as a baby, you don't all of a sudden start walking.
Yeah, I know. I love that example. Yeah. It's like people forget that, you know, you learn walking by falling. That's how you learn to ride your bike, by falling off of it a bunch of times.
Yeah. Actually, I don't know how to ride a bike, so.
Well, see, there's one more thing on your list before you leave.
I could easily say I'm not good at riding a bicycle. Oh, it's not me. I could easily say that because I'm inexperienced. So what I have to do is just figure out how to learn how to ride a bicycle, And how to do it is maybe go to somebody who already knows how to do it, or try it on my own if I don't have anybody to help me, and fall down a few times, watch it on YouTube.
YouTube.
See how other people have done it. YouTube has everything.
Yeah.
And that, so you choose the good and see how it's been done. So you have to actually want to do it, because you can't do something if you don't want to do it. The motivation has to be there. So once that's there, then there's action has to take place, because it's easy to say, I want to learn how to ride a bike. And that's what I've been saying the last few years. I said, I want to learn how to ride a bicycle one day, but really I've never actually put it to action. Now, after our podcast, if I decide I want to do it, yeah, I'll go online and I'll do it. The next time I talk to you, I'll be.
This will be great. I want to see a picture of you riding a bike. there's a lot of really interesting nuggets. One, for me, helping people make a change, you're absolutely right. The very first block on my slide of making a change is you gotta want it. And not like, I want to lose 10 pounds and then go eat a pizza. I mean, it's like, you gotta want it, like you made a decision that this is a thing that you want, and you decided that you're going to do what it takes to do that. A little bit different than, I wish I was a millionaire. Well, and so part of that is visualizing, but part of it is also, I would like to say that building self-esteem and building and making changes in your life would be easy, but it's not, because there's a lot of complex pieces that go into it. But part of it is you gotta really, really want it. When I was 15 years old, I looked up at an airplane flying over, and I said to myself, that's what I want to do. I want to fly an airplane for a living. Now, I had no idea. I had no money. I didn't know what it was involved, how physical it has to be. I had no idea what that was about, but I did know that I did want to do it. And that want to do it lasted 16 years. It took me 16 years to become a qualified Air Force pilot. A lot of things happened in those 16 years that I had to overcome to get there. But the key piece of that was that I wanted it really badly. And so talk to me about young women and things that they want. I mean, one of the things that I think that you'd have to battle in my age, when I was growing up, one of the things I find interesting as a guy, when I grew up as a young man, and not a couple other things here that we'll point out. I grew up as a tall, white American male in a very nice neighborhood. Every opportunity was available to me if I wanted to take it. Much different than a young woman from Kenya, or just a young woman. I mean, women, when I grew up, could be secretaries and nurses and flight attendants, but they couldn't be pilots. So now you're in a new age and you're working with young women. How is that a challenge to say, well, what do you want to be? And as well, I can't be that, I can't be that. It's like, no, you could.
Nothing much has changed. At the end of the day, there's a lot of myths about what girls should be and should not be. So at the end of the day, what I've noticed with all the girls I've worked with, they just want to be valued, they want to be heard, and they want to be happy. And they don't want to be judged for who they are. They just want people to accept them so they can try different things. And that's the biggest thing. And for me, is to show them that, yes, you're valued, you're accepted, and you can do anything you set your mind to. No matter what your circumstances, you get a wanted so bad that when you wake up in the morning, it's the first thing you think of.
Sweet. Well, sadly, the show, we're done. It's like, okay, we're going to have another show. The empoweredme.ca gets you to Harriet. 780-265-6884 gets you to Harriet.
You bet.
If what we have talked about is connecting to you in any way, you can either connect to me or you can connect to Harriet. I can pass that information on back to you. Other than that, it's been an absolute joy, Harry, to see you again. Enjoy the cooler weather up in the north. I'll be thinking about you this week. Thanks so much for being a guest on my show.
Oh, and thank you so much, Laura, for having me again.
All right. Well, we'll stay in touch. Thanks so much. Be well.
Yeah, you as well, Laura.
All right, that's it for the show.
Dream on, fly high, live adventurously on Transformation Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. And we hope you'll join us next month as Laura helps you find your unique gifts so you can bring them to the world. For more information on Laura Meeks or to listen to past shows, visit her website at flyhighliving.com. Check out her hit Dream On 12-week course, where you get the personal attention you need to fly high in your new life.